Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Sublimely Gothic, the podcast devoted only to the most sordid and macabre tales ever penned to paper. Here you shall explore the darkest jewels of literature with gothic enthusiasts Amy and Jess. Enter this realm at your own risk, for the night is dark and full of terrors. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is the final episode of Season 2 of Sublimely Gothic. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are taking a break from our traditional format of analyzing gothic novels to explore the gothic tropes within a more mainstream franchise. Last season's final was all about the gothic in Harry Potter, and now we move on to another much beloved and despised book series, The Twilight Saga. So, you know, let us each talk about first our original exposures to the Twilight Saga. So what was your first introduction to this saga?
So I'm trying to figure out how old I was. Not that that's like super important, but I do think it kind of, I think it does kind of, I wasn't a young, okay, I was in my like middle or early 20s when I first read mid-20s when I first read the Twilight books. And I had a friend who was just, a friend from high school who was like, you've got to read these books. And I was like, I don't know about this. And then I started reading them and I just like, I was hooked. I remember reading them at my my husband at the time, boyfriend's house. And I just like could not stop. I think that there was a lot of just wanting to read something that was very fantastic and fantastical and romantic and very escapism-y. So, and then I read all the books, I saw all the movies, and, kind of toward the end of the films, they became much maligned. And as a card-carrying feminist, it was kind of hard for me to separate some of the criticism from the stories. But what was your initial encounter with Bella, Edward, and Jacob?
Yeah, well, it was my sister that first recommended them to me, but I want to say that I was already in college. Yeah, by you being your early 20s, I would have been like, I think I was literally in my early college years, late teens. And so they had been out for quite a few years already. And so my sister just recommended them to me, and then I read them. I don't know if I read her copies or I got my own copies, but I just remember really enjoying them and just, again, just liking the very, again, very simple story, but still, you know, to me and my little teenage mind, very moving. And and then I think I'm curious, again, we're definitely part of this. We have to talk about the controversy because it definitely seems you, by your background in gender studies and feminist studies, you got a lot more flack and just were a lot exposed significantly more to the criticism than I ever was, because I knew it was out there. But really, before I got deep into podcasts a year or so ago, as much as I adore things like Twilight and Harry Potter and stuff, my fandom has always been very private. I never interacted so much with people regarding those sort of books. So yeah, just tell me about, you know, reconciling, you know, your love of the books with that specific crowd that you were in.
Well, I think, you know, I had graduated. So I had graduated college. I was, you know, I'd moved away from my home. I did a lot of reading I just tried to keep that like insight into feminism, kind of like the finger on the pulse of pop culture, feminism. This is also kind of the thing that made me really angry at a lot of criticism, not because I hold like Twilight so dear. I actually like went for Halloween one year as Team Edward and Team Jacob with one of my coworkers. So this was my professional career, but the criticism kind of, I kept reading on Jezebel was the website. And I used to really love that site, but this kind of put a bad taste in my mouth for it. I think something that the Gothic librarian had mentioned was a lack of familiarity with some of just kind of like non-readers or non-Gothic readers or romance novel readers with some of the genre tropes. And I'm not going to say I was like super familiar with them, but I was probably less critical. And, you know, people said Edward was a stalker and, you know, Bella was an idiot and all these things. And that's not how I read Bella. I read her as intentionally kind of not very fleshed out so the reader could put themselves in Bella's shoes. I'm kind of rambling, but I think the last thing I would say is I thought it was kind of relatable in the fact of being young and having a crush on somebody and just kind of all those feelings. So I think that's, you know, I've said it before, I'm a romantic. So that's why it kind of resonated with me. And some of the criticism I just didn't think was very apt. I think people forget what it's like to be a teenage girl sometimes. And that comes into some criticism as well. It seems like things that women enjoy are often more criticized than, you know, something a man would enjoy. It's a very long
answer. Yes, we've discussed that multiple times in this podcast about how what women like is demonized. And yeah, like I tend to take the position where I don't want to dismiss some of the points because, yeah, Edward is a stalker, basically. I can't deny that. But at the same time, I think critics don't always give the readers or fans of Twilight enough credit because, again, it's not so much a manual of this is how a relationship should be. Like, I think most people are intelligent enough to know that this crazy fantastical story that happens between a teenager and a 118-year-old vampire, these are not applicable to the real world. Like, if anything, I think things like 50 Shades of Grey, which is quote-unquote, like, realistic, like, not have supernatural elements, I think that is more damaging in terms of feminism because, you know, you can kind of separate things a little bit when there's that type of fantasy involved in Twilight.
I agree. And I've never read 50 Shades of Grey, even though I mention it on this, just because, I don't know, it's just so, I can see how that's a little bit more damaging. And I think I totally agree with you. The fact that this is, it's a vampire, like, come on, you know, like, what are we trying to think about here? I don't disagree that some of Edward's actions are creepy, and I haven't fully, for as much as I've loved Twilight, I didn't like just completely devour Midnight Sun. If anything, I started to read it and I was really bothered by that Edward. I kind of preferred Bella's romanticized version of Edward.
Oh, really? I totally devoured Midnight Sun.
I
was really worried that, like, by being older and knowing all the criticism, that I would just tear it up. And I'm like, oh, I can still enjoy this. Yay.
It was kind of nice. I started it. And it's not to say I just, you know, I maybe didn't get too far into it. But I'm at the very beginning where he's, like, going to, spoilers, everybody, thinking about killing the entire class because Bella smells so good. I was like, oh, my gosh. And then I had some other reading to do. So maybe I'll get into it and just love it. But it was nice to see some of those familiar character names, Jasper, Emmett, Rosalie, all those kids.
Alrighty then. So yeah, this is going to be similar format as, again, the Gothic and Harry Potter episode, where we are going to take our Gothometer and take each category and basically just list off and discuss all the elements within that category within the Twilight saga that we feel is relevant to the tenets of Gothic literature. And the first one is setting and atmosphere.
You know, I think there are a few settings in the stories. Mainly it takes place in Forks, Washington. I've never been to Forks. Have you been to Forks?
No, I was raised in Southern Oregon, but no, my trips up to Washington State were limited. Yeah, and so I know very little of the real Forks, but in terms of, you know, Gothic tropes, I put Forks down because it's dark, it's dreary, it's, you know, again, they purposely choose it because there isn't a lot of sunlight most of the year.
Yeah, I loved that. Like, when we meet Bella initially, she's in Arizona and is kind of thrust into the into Forks. So, which she's not super thrilled about initially. The other setting, and I believe it's in New Moon, where they go to Italy and there's a castle with all the old vampires. And oh my gosh, there's a specific name for them. Kind of like
Volturra?
Yes, yes.
I know the coven is called the Volturi coven, but like, yeah, the region is Volturra.
Yes. So that's kind of the castle. And, you know, there's some vampire activity going on there.
Yeah, no. Yeah, like I thought of that too. And in a way, like I was thinking, I'm like, okay, like Twilight going through, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge because beyond a superficial level, Twilight, again, is not appealing to gothic nerds like us. It's appealing to a much more wider universal audience. But when I started really thinking about it, in a way, some elements of Twilight are going not just into gothic literature, but like real, real old school 18th century gothic literature, again, by the Volturi Coven and them being centralized in Italy. That is tying into the old gothic tradition of Italy being like the place where shit happens.
Oh, that's a really good point. I know, I believe Stephanie Meyer is a fan of gothic literature. I think she mentions like Bella's favorite book being Wuthering Heights. I'm not 100% sure, but as far as setting specifically, it doesn't really take place the Volturra and maybe Seattle for a little bit, Arizona, they go to Florida at some point. But beyond that, that's kind of the extent of it.
Yeah, no, those are the basic locations. And again, just with the idea that everything like super supernatural or scary happens in Italy, like that can be traced to Castle of Otranto and the Mysteries of Udolpho, most of Anne Radcliffe's work, the Italian Sicilian romance, like all of those take place in Italy. So yeah, just this idea that Italy, by, you know, probably deriving from, you know, the Roman civilization and the Roman Empire, that it was the cradle of, you know, what we in the West consider as our sort of ancestry, you know, just the, you know, going into that whole deal that Italy represents all like those old school beliefs and by extension, all those old school, like supernatural fantasies.
Yeah. The only other location, that Isle Esme, where the Edward and Bella go on their honeymoon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, I forgot about Isle Esme. Is it off Brazil or what is? I forget where it is.
I don't remember, to be quite honest. I just remember like being impatient to get to the honeymoon scene. I mean, I do read a little bit of romance scattered into my reading. And I was like, come on, let's just get this over with. We've waited for how freaking long for this to happen. So
was that the like maid or whatever who comes in to like clean their place like knows he's a vampire. And she's like, what are you doing with a human girl?
Oh my gosh, yes. But that wasn't, I mean, I've got so many things I'm thinking about, but I guess the private island, because, you know, Edward can't be in the sun, otherwise he sparkles. Which again, with a gothic librarian and the sparkling also gets made fun of a lot. As far as in Twilight, and I'm not saying it's not unjust, but the Gothic librarian, Julia, made the point that was not completely unfair and how it could be representative of, you know, kind of a statuesque like skin. I'm just thinking about like, you know, the David carved in marble and very almost translucent skin. So that comparison could be made there.
Yeah, that's kind of how I sort of interpret it, because Twilight is the most famous, but yeah, she's not the first one to come up with that sort of thing. Not that there were vampires, but I have read other paranormal romance where like the sort of statuesque thing comes into play.
Yeah, you know, and for as much as that's maligned and criticized, I just kind of was like, I don't care. Like, you know, they sparkle in the sun, like whatever. That wasn't one of those things that really got under my skin. I just was kind of like, there were other things toward the end of it that kind of annoyed me, but that wasn't one of them.
If anything, the sparkling thing was one of the few things I felt that the movies didn't butcher.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because they didn't make it like whole, like total like facets of diamonds, like prisms everywhere. They did make it genuinely more statuesque. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this isn't totally ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, if we're talking about like the movie portrayals of this, the first movie, I, as kind of low budget-esque as it was, I kind of enjoyed that one the most because they didn't get too carried away with some of the special effects where they did later, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, we're digressing, you know, we'll get to like the supernatural elements later. But going back to settings, another setting that I felt again was another real throwback to old school 18th century Gothic is the meadow scene. And the fact that this pivotal Edward revealing of himself happens in a forest, in nature, in the sublimity of nature. Like, you know, Anne Radcliffe devotes 300 pages of her books to those.
That is it. Excellent point. Yeah, the scene in the meadow and just some of the scenes in nature. We haven't talked about Jacob at all. I know there's kind of, they meet Jacob, and Jacob, I'm not team Jacob by any means. So there's a lot of action that takes place with him in nature as well. So, mm-hmm. But that's an excellent point that I totally forgot about.
Coming back to the real super old school elements of Gothic, but I think we might have exhausted that. Shall we move into the past?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any, if I can think of any sort of, other than just the fancy house the Cullens live in, I guess it's not, it's portrayed very modern, not.
Yeah, postmodern, art deco.
Yeah. And I think I may have seen the movie before I read the first book. Maybe I don't remember what the timeline was, but I thought it was appropriate and good. So I don't know as far as, you know, atmosphere. I guess that's not really atmosphere, but anyway, sorry.
Yeah, but in regards to the past, like, I think to me the past is a much more prominent element of the story because, you know, throughout the whole series we get the past of each specific vampire in the Olympic Coven.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that in that part of Edward's kind of struggle is his past and some of the sins that have been committed in the past, and just being a vampire, you kind of have a deep connection with the past too.
And it's just not one past, there are multiple pasts, again, multiple eras that have to be that are explained throughout the series, because we've got Edward, who died in 1918 in the big influenza pandemic, which we're hearing more and more about, again, in comparison to our coronavirus pandemic.
How appropriate. Great. That keeps popping up.
Yeah, and then there's Alice, who is... She was bitten in the 20s, and she was in an insane asylum because she could kind of start to see the future and people thought she was crazy.
Oh yeah. Yes. Alice was kind of, when I was reading this the first time, she was one of my favorites. I just liked her kind of sweet nature.
She's very cute. I think that definitely my favorite, not that she's my favorite character, but definitely favorite backstory with the past, is Rosalie.
Rosalie's pretty fun character. I bet she was fun to play, too.
And especially as you read more of Midnight Sun and being able to see Edward's, you know, telepathic, you know, views of Rosalie, getting more... She is much more of a bitch in Midnight Sun than we naturally see from Bella's perspective in Twilight.
Oh, how funny. Okay, that's exciting.
Such a bitch, but at the same time, you understand why she's a bitch, because her past is, of course, she was in this arranged marriage to, like, this really famous or well-to-do guy, you know, in her town, and then she ends up getting raped by his buddies.
That'll piss somebody off, for sure.
And then when she becomes a vampire, she hunts them down one by one until she finally steals a wedding dress and finds her ex-fiancé and kills him slowly and agonizingly.
So now I've changed my mind, and Rosalie is my favorite character. No, I forgot about that part. That was pretty
You forgot about that part?
Until you reminded me, and now I can see it so vividly in my head. I remember her at the end of the series thinking, like, okay, I get it. And I don't hate her as much as I did, because she's just kind of mean to Bella for a long time. So
yeah, she is very, and you know, you understand, and like, just because I like her as a character doesn't mean I like her again from a sense of like more how morally good she is. She's multidimensional.
Yes, Yes, I agree.
And then who else? Then we get Jasper, who was bitten during the Civil War. I forget so much about... He had a beef with his, like, original creator, and now they're not on speaking terms. I don't even remember the whole thing with Jasper.
I just remember Jasper tries to... I think Bella, like, cuts her hand, and he, like, lunges at her.
Yeah, he goes crazy, and that's what prompts Edward to break up with her in New Moon.
Yes, and he seems to be the one that struggles...
He struggles the most with their vegetarian way of life.
Right.
And then Emmett, who Rosalie actually saved because he got mauled by a bear. And it's a testament to her sense of restraint because she carried him 100 miles to Carlisle to have him bite Emmett because she didn't trust herself to do it.
Dang. First of all, Emmett was kind of bear-like. He's so big. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I don't understand how... Emmett and Rosalie are together because Emmett's so nice and she's a bitch.
I just kind of remember them being like the cheerleader and the football player in a way, but like just two really, not that any of the Cullens are bad looking, but two really good looking people. That's kind of how I rationalized it in my mind.
Yep. And then we've got Esme, who, again, her story is really sad. Her past is so sad.
Esme, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of her. I can see that.
I haven't read Twilight in years, and still I remember it more than you do.
Yeah, Esme, I'm just trying to think about her. Did she lose a husband? Is that what happened?
She loses a child.
A child, okay.
Yeah, so she was a school teacher, and she actually knew Carlisle when... he was like the village doctor when she was a kid. And then she was a school teacher for a little bit. She got married, but her husband was abusive. She ran away from him and she gave birth to like a stillborn baby, was so upset by it that she jumped off the cliff and Carlisle found her in the morgue.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know why I didn't remember that. I think I was just so wrapped up in the romance. But Carlisle, he's kind of like he's the main...
Yeah, he's the oldest of course, the Olympic Coven, because he was bitten in like the 17th century and his father was a clergyman against all witchcraft and vampires and stuff. And so, yeah, so Carlisle tried multiple times to like kill himself, you know, but of course he was indestructible and couldn't.
Right. Interesting.
And then he gets to a point where he's just so starving that he kills a deer and drinks its blood. And then he gets the idea, oh, I will be a vegetarian.
Which that does, this is something, and I guess maybe it's just true to this specific story. I guess that works for every vampire story. I'm trying to think of one where they don't drink animal blood. It's just blood. That's all they're really looking for, not human blood. I know there's different sorts of like tastiness. But
yeah, well, in the Twilight Saga, they definitely portray it as it is a bit of a struggle to settle for animal blood and not human blood.
So you're giving me a flashback to the scene of pregnant Bella, which this is kind of gets to the point where I, as much as I love the stories, some in Breaking Dawn, it just kind of goes a little too weird for me at parts mm-hmm. of it. Because she's drinking human blood, and then also made me think of a movie called The Only Lovers Left Alive, where they go to a blood bank and get little blood. But I remember her drinking it out of like a little like cup with a straw.
Cup, yeah.
Yeah. But I guess now that I'm thinking this through, Carlisle would have access to some of those things as a doctor himself.
Yeah. So yeah, just that's one thing I really like about the series, like showing it wasn't, you know, each vampire we get a story of a different era of history. And in fact, there is a specific reference book like Twilight, a History, that kind of goes into all those various eras from which those specific vampires came from. And I want to get it at some point when my book budget allows it.
Okay. I didn't know there was like a history book. That's really interesting.
You know, for our Harry Potter podcast, I bought like the Philosophy and Harry Potter book. And there's this whole like pop culture and philosophy series, this whole pop culture and history series. And so, yeah, so the Twilight and history is part of like that fusion of like academia with pop culture.
How interesting. Okay. I guess like I delved a little bit and then I kind of was like, I started reading something else. I don't know. I came out of the Twilight love. I did read, I think I read The Short Second Life of Bree Tanner. But I'm not 100% sure.
I did not read it. I saw it. I saw it for $2.50 at Goodwill, but I'm just like, meh.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it. It was fine. It just dealt with the whole takeover of the port and, you know, all the vampires down there. And she just happened to be one of them. I don't know. Some really like super hardcore Twilight fan is probably like, oh my God, I can't believe you are dismissive of that. But it just was kind of like, okay, I didn't do much for me.
So, past huge component of Twilight by the nature of, not just by the nature of the vampires being immortal, but Stephanie Meyer makes the point to go into each and every story.
And she does a really nice job of that because it's kind of interwoven throughout the books. It's not, it doesn't hit you all in one.
It's not an info dump, yeah.
Right, which I appreciate. It kind of interwoven, and it kind of forces you to keep reading because if you want to know Jasper's story, you have to wait for a couple of books. I remember that as well. For some reason, I was very curious about him.
Yeah, we kind of know what happened to Emmett, but we don't get like the full details of Emmett until Midnight Sun.
Yeah, okay.
And then we don't get Rosalie's story until the third book it's a plot point where she's only telling it as a means to try and convince Bella not to become a vampire.
Yes, right. And then she's also very concerned about them having a kid too, right? I mean, it's kind of portrayed as jealousy for a little.
Yeah, partially. So we can move into the next category that's kind of been sprinkled throughout our discussion thus far is the supernatural. Well, they're vampires. And we talked about in previous episodes, like with the historian and with Carmilla, that as Julia the Gothic librarian said, there are various times in like publishing trends where vampires will make a comeback. And definitely the mid-2000s was when Twilight first happened. It's when the historian was published. Like, for whatever reason, mid-2000s, the vampires were coming back. And I think not a far-fetched assumption to say that Twilight has now eclipsed all, at least modern, interpretations of vampires.
Yeah, I think so. I also think that Twilight is, like, the series is kind of a good gateway to other Gothic novels. I think a lot of it has enough Gothic elements for somebody to go, maybe I should check out Dracula and Carmilla. I think maybe I say that as a person that has always liked Gothic novels, but didn't delve too deep into some of the things that are kind of drawn out in Twilight. I think something that we haven't talked about, and I understand it's probably just because maybe it's our preference, is Jacob and his werewolf friends.
Yes, another part of the supernatural, werewolves.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if they refer to themselves as werewolves, although in Breaking Dawn we learn, you know, because who is it? There's the Volturi, there's Aro, there's Caius, and who's the other guy?
Oh, I can see them in my mind's eye.
But anyway, I think it's Caius who has really, really hates werewolves. He has his own, like, personal vendetta with werewolves. And so we learned that there are actually werewolves who are, like, more traditional, in fact, and their transformation is contingent upon, like, the lunar cycles.
Right.
Whereas the shapeshifters of the, you know, indigenous tribe are just that, shapeshifters, that their shapeshifting animal could have been, like, anything, and it just happened to be a wolf.
Right.
I really liked that detail at the end of Breaking Dawn.
The shapeshifting at the...
Well, just the idea that there were both these sort of shapeshifting werewolves and then, like, quote-unquote, more traditional werewolves.
Yeah. You know, as far as that they did add some nuance, because then I don't think any vampires can shapeshift, right? Or can they? I don't remember.
No, I don't think so.
But there is definitely tension between the werewolves and the vampires. And there are certain parts of the beach that they can't go to and they can go to. And it's pretty intense. But in the end, they end up helping the Cullens out, I think.
Like, again, the whole vampires versus werewolves, that's an old rivalry. Like, Stephanie Meyer did not make that up. Like, that's an old Like, it's sort of like that, I don't know why, but there's always this thing that the pirates and ninjas have it out for each other.
I did not know that, but now I do.
Yeah. So it's always the vampires against the werewolves. Like, that's not new, to the point that I vowed that if ever I do fantasy or paranormal romance, I will not do that rivalry.
That's good. I mean, it's kind of, it's been done plenty of times.
Like, to me, like, for me, the rivalry with vampires would be fairies.
Oh, really?
Yes, because vampires are dark and undead, where the fairies are all about nature and life.
That also makes me think of True Blood. I'm scattered all over the place.
Oh, yeah, because she's part fairy, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Oh, I forgot about
that.
She
has the most delicious blood.
Yeah, so supernatural elements, what else? So really, it's just the vampires and both types of the werewolves. And I don't know how much this has been done, probably in some capacity, especially in modern times, how much vampires are used in romance. But again, this idea of like these children who are half vampire, half human.
Yeah. Yes. Are we going to talk about Renesmee?
Renesmee.
This is where we're getting into the part of the series that I wasn't super into. I do want to talk about Bella herself, though, because she's not a vampire, but she has a psychic ability to block. Like, Edward can't read her mind, and that like is kind of like, oh my, what is
going on? Yeah. So going back to the vampires, you know, in the Stephanie Meyer interpretation of them, is that each vampire has his own specific like superpower ability. So for Edward, that's telepathy. But for whatever reason, he can't see into Bella's mind.
I don't know if I ever understood fully why she has that power, because she's not a vampire. I don't think she has any.
She's not a vampire. And then in Midnight Sun, in Edward's perspective, there are points where Edward is close to her dad. He can read her dad's thoughts a little bit, but not as clearly as others. So I think we're assumed that this is some sort of super recessive gene that for whatever reason, Bella has it.
Okay. Yeah, it was just, I mean, like, I can understand as, like, a way to kind of have Edward, who's just kind of at the beginning of Midnight Sun, kind of like, oh my gosh, everybody's just so enamored with this new girl. How annoying, you know, how, like, basic of all these people. And then I know that part of her intrigue is, like, he can't read her thoughts like he can everybody else. I just never remember a really good explanation as to why that was a thing of hers, but I think I like the very recessive trait.
I think it's supposed to be that's sort of the beginnings of what ends up being her vampire ability, because if I recall, Jane can't torture Bella in the same way she can torture other people. So it's not so much like just Edward, like Bella has some sort of immunity to vampiric superpowers, and that's only amplified when she becomes a vampire, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, she can do her, like, little thought bubble thing and project out to kind of, like, protect people. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the series, but it has its flaws for me.
It has its flaws. I'm not so much picky about the fact that the quote-unquote magic system of vampirism isn't as fleshed out, but I do appreciate Stephanie Meyer, even from the very beginning when I started reading it, of how much in a very different direction she went with vampires. Like, she was not using the sort of sexy gothic type of vampires as a sort of crutch.
No, she makes them high school kids.
She makes them high school kids, and she makes them kind of more like Marvel men with superpowers. And I genuinely, truly appreciated that when I was reading them, and to this day.
Yeah, it's a nice way to present that, and not having them lurk in the shadows and their eyes. They're kind of just like, I mean, I know they're very much choosing to blend in, but it is a very, it's a good, it's an interesting take not to have them. I'm thinking through all this. I'm thinking about A Discovery of Witches a little bit, since you mentioned some.
Yes,
of that,
I need to read. I'm going to read that next month.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear your thoughts on that. But as far as the way vampires are portrayed, maybe that too was kind of making that a little more approachable to a wider audience, because they always do lurk in the shadows. And they're, you know, you think about Dracula. And I think up until this point, people probably thought vampires, Dracula, or Blade, or, you know, just a bad guy. I know there was an interview.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right. They were to be slayed, not to, like, you know, hang out with or have a caring family around them and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So any other elements of the supernatural?
I just kind of wondered if there's any sort of controversy. I'm not fully aware of it related to Jacob, the Quaalude. Is that what they're called?
I know that there is some controversy about particularly how that indigenous tribe, which is a real one, how it was portrayed in the series, and how I think there's this kind of sentiment that for all of Stephanie Meyer's success, maybe not taking more time to be helpful to this specific indigenous tribe and advocate for them and things like that.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, because I feel like that it was very, for lack of knowledge here, kind of stereotyping sometimes too, which it's fine to stereotype vampires, you know, but as far as a native people. Yeah, I didn't, again, that wasn't like my, those, that wasn't my favorite thing. I know there were a bunch of people that really liked that aspect of Twilight. It just wasn't what I focused on.
Yeah, well, again, it's sort of, you like the fact that she tried, but again, couldn't go, because she's just a random ass white lady, can't go too deep into the indigenous culture, you know?
Right.
It's a very common half-ass white lady thing to do.
I bet that there was probably a thought that there was some, you know, she thought she was doing some good, maybe, like, just bring this to, like, bring people to light. I don't know. I feel like I'm about to step in it, so I don't know.
Yeah, like that controversy has become so prominent that even some, like, prominent booktubers, when they did their reviews of Midnight Sun back in August, they'll be like, you know, so much percentage, like, of the profits of this video will go towards this tribe.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't
know that. Yeah. Personally, if it was me, if I've decided after my experience, like, working at that nonprofit that helped continental U.S. indigenous people, is that if I ever have an indigenous character or an indigenous tribe, I will do my research, but it will be a fictional tribe, because I don't want to step on anyone's toes. Not the Apache, not the Pueblo of Acoma, not the Ojibwe, nobody.
I think that's for the best.
Category number 4, heroes, heroines, and villains. So now we can go into the deep aspects of Bella.
Well, and I think that's a complaint often, isn't it? Is that Bella is so surface level. There's not much to her. And I kind of don't really think that's completely fair, because I don't know. I just didn't. I was like, I enjoyed her character. I think that a lot of people, and especially when I was reading feminist criticism of this, wanted her to be more kind of feminist and stand up for herself and, you know, not make...
They wanted Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
They wanted Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I'm sorry, that's just not every story. I think that everybody just needs to understand that. Not every book can have a strong feminist hero. She, like, you know... People were critical. She makes dinner for her dad. She wants to get married. She wants to do all these things that are, I didn't have a problem with it when I was reading it. I wasn't like, man, I really wish she was like reading, sitting here reading de Beauvoir or whatever. I was just like, whatever. I mean, she does what she does. She likes Edward, and that's fine. And she gets a little, she kind of loses her shit over it in Eclipse. Second book's Eclipse. Okay.
New Moon. Third book's Eclipse.
Third book's Eclipse. Okay. New Moon. I was just looking at the covers. She, and I liked how Stephanie Meyer did that with the, like, blank pages in the books. I think that it was just like, oh, I remember heartbreak when you're that age.
I've been there when I lost my shit at that age.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what bothered me. I think so many people forgot what it's like to be that age, that they just kind of lacked empathy with Bella. And she wasn't a feminist hero, but not every character needs to be a feminist hero. That's what I have to say.
Yeah. And there's this whole thing that Bella doesn't, act like a real person or doesn't respond to things like a real person. And I just have never gotten that criticism because in terms of the series I just finished, Court of Thorns and Roses, people accuse the same thing of Pharaoh, that main character, this whole sense of she doesn't act like a real person. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, I do not understand this sort of this accusation of they don't act like real people, because I have never gotten that vibe.
I think that people think they know a lot. I don't know. I think that's a little ridiculous because not everybody knows everybody who's encountered people that are not like them. Maybe that's the criticism. Maybe they're not like you. So what? A lot of people aren't.
Yeah. And going back to the fact that I was saying that in many ways, Twilight is emblematic of really old school 18th century Gothic is that in fact, Bella is much more like those old school 18th century heroines in Gothic literature, like Isabella in Castle of Otranto.
Right. Or not Otranto.
Emily in, you know, Emily in Mysteries of Udolpho. She's being that damsel in distress, but I would make the same argument that I made with those old school heroines is that they're not being damsel in distresses. They actually are kind of taking back their agency in the limited capacity that they can by running away from the evil patriarchs in their life.
Yeah. And I mean, she wants to be a vampire, and that sounds pretty exciting. I mean, I don't know how, you know, anti-feminist that I think it's, I would argue it's a little bit more than just being with Edward. You know, I totally make
that argument. And that's something I did in my book review of Midnight Sun on my BookTube channel, because basically there's the idea, well, again, the insinuation that you're giving up your whole life for a man, they're equating vampirism with giving up your life for a man and giving up your own dreams and stuff. And it's like, excuse me, look at Carlyle. He's not sitting there all day looking at goo-goo eyes at Esme. He's a doctor. He has a life. He has a career. Bella could do the same thing.
Right. That implication was always a little unfair to me, I thought, because if anything, she's saying, like, I want to have a lot of options. I mean, she can try out various different things. They move and they do something else. Or, you know, she's a different person somewhere else. And kind of, I know they keep moving because of they're kind of stuck in this age and being in high school and things like that. So I just don't like that. I think it's a little dismissive, and I'm going to just stick by. Not every character can be a feminist hero. I also think you make a very great point about her in relation to other Gothic heroines. I mean, she's very much in line with that, which is also something to be said. A lot of the criticism, I don't know a lot of people that criticize this that may have read a lot of Gothic literature and understood and analyzed those heroines. I mean, maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe they just don't like it because they don't like to read about people in love. And that's too bad.
Mm-hmm. And again, Twilight is being a love story, going much more in tune with the like romantic aspect of Gothic literature with like Wuthering Heights and Jane Eyre rather than the gory monsters like Dracula and Frankenstein.
Right, right. And there's nothing wrong with that. You made me think of Mexican Gothic and conversation. My friend Morgan just posted something, a figure called like the Fungi Queen or something. And I was like, that makes me think of Mexican Gothic and how the front half of it is like a traditional Gothic novel. And then the back half is like, what the hell's going on? So
crazy sci-fi.
Yeah.
That made me think of total tangent here, but the Ouroboros, that snake eating itself out, that symbol that shows up in Mexican Gothic, mm-hmm. It actually showed up in another thriller that I just read this month.
Oh, weird. Okay.
Anyway, but yeah, Bella, as you know, people hate her. They think she's so two-dimensional, gives up her life for a man, isn't, you know, a complete badass, and I would argue that I'm definitely in that camp of pushing back against that. You know, the reality is that not every, you know, woman is a Jo March or an Arya Stark,
right,
who like totally is willing to flout conventions. Most of us want a balance of, you know, traditional feminine things, but also being able to explore masculine things.
Right. Yeah. I did not have that problem with Bella. And if anything,
no, neither did I. I never did.
I What about Edward? A lot of criticism of Edward being
Edward as a hero. Okay. Edward is in that old school gothic as being the brooding bad boy.
Yes.
And by extension, he's not being new in gothic literature because the idea of the bad boy being dangerous and but still desiring you, like, that's all over Dracula.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
People love Dracula.
Absolutely. People.
I think there's the sense of, again, we can see lots of these things that occur in Dracula and old school 18th century gothic, but there's a sense of the only way people can enjoy that is to have a certain degree of historical forgiveness, and you can't apply the same historical forgiveness to Twilight.
Okay. That's interesting to think about. He does some weird stuff, and then I think in the context of, like, I think that people, that's a lot of having read some romance novels. I just think it's reader preference. I mean, sometimes that can come across as like, oh, it's so romantic. Not, and, you know, a little creepy. Yes. And some people, yeah, it's a little stalkery.
Well, I think it's appealing. Not that, again, all things in moderation, you know. In reality, most people are smart enough to realize that, no, it's not good to have a partner who's completely obsessed with you, who has nothing else going on in their life.
Right.
But that just sort of insinuation, again, in a fictional vampire romance novel, like, that fantasy is appealing to so many men and women who feel that other people in this day and age treat dating so casually and just feel like they're just a footnote in their significant other's lives, that level of focus on them, the level of focus that Edward gives Bella, is appealing.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely it is. I mean, and especially to a teenage girl. I feel like,
Especially to a teenage girl, because men at, you know, certainly boys at that age haven't totally mastered their dating game and do a lot of stupid things.
Right. Yeah, right. They do a lot of dumb things that they feel like is romantic, and maybe it is definitely not received that way. I also remember it being people being critical of the story, the books, because, like I said, the honeymoon scene doesn't come until after they're married, and it's in Breaking Dawn. And people had dubbed this abstinence porn, which is a funny way to say that. But basically,
I've never heard of such a phrase.
I don't know.
I'm not saying that isn't. It's more pro-abstinence just by the nature that Stephanie Meyer is Mormon.
Right.
But I think in a way, not even from necessarily a religious perspective, just from the fact of, you know, again, that desire in a lot of people to go back to more traditional dating and courtship and romanticizing that element of how men interacted with women.
Yeah, I mean, and I also think that maybe some of the criticism is a little harmful. It's harmful in a lot of, all of this can be harmful in many ways. Like, if that's, you know, what I'm saying is, if there is a woman who believes that they don't want to have, you know, if they want to be abstinent until marriage, what's wrong with that? Why are we being so critical of it? It's not, as long as it's a decision made by the woman, then that's fine. I know in this story, Bella's like ready to go, and Edward's like, no, no, not yet. Which I don't know how, because I don't know if he felt like he was going to. He's very concerned about damning himself. Or he's already damned, he says. He doesn't want to damn her to hell, I think. I didn't remember if that was like kind of went hand in hand or not.
And part of it, he was afraid he would snap her like a little twig.
Well, that's a legitimate fear, I guess. The Twilight books conflate Bella losing her virginity with the loss of things, including her sense of self. I don't know. Again, things that just didn't bother me as much. Apparently, according to some of the criticism, it is idealizing emotionally and physical abuse and meets all 15 criteria set by the National Domestic Violence Hotline for being an abusive relationship. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, again, going back to Edward as the, again, brooding hero. And again, going back to that really old, I feel like the most damaging thing in my mind, one of the most damaging things, if you want to say that literature is damaging, like especially portraying romance, is the idea that you can change a bad boy.
Yeah, that's quite naive.
Yeah, that is very naive, and it's very egotistical.
That as well. Yes, 100%.
Yeah, so, but to me, especially when it comes to vampires, like, it's, you have to say, it's not so much that his personality is bad, like Christian Grey, although people will make tons of arguments that Edward's personality also sucks, but it's inflating, you know, the vampirism itself with, like, the bad boyness.
Right, which I think is maybe more palatable to me than I read maybe the first couple chapters of 50 Shades of Grey and couldn't deal with it because I couldn't stand Christian Grey, fully knowing that it's basically Twilight fan fiction.
What was it called? Master of the Universe?
Master of the Universe.
Oh, like, God. That was the original fanfic's name before it became 50 Shades of Grey,
I think. Jeez. I don't know, but that's pretty goofy. That was what it was. That's funny.
Yeah. So, and then villains in Twilight. So, first book, we get the nomads, James, the tracker.
Yes. Yeah, because they're just, basically the Cullens are getting flack for what those guys are doing, hunting, just the townspeople.
He is definitely kind of the very typical, like, thriller antagonist of, like, the serial killer, that he is just, probably her blood tastes good to him as well, maybe not as much as Edward, but it's just the very human, even though he's a vampire, the very human nature of all of these vampires are willing to go out of their way to protect this one human girl. Therefore, I want to kill this human girl to stroke my ego.
That sounds very, very gross and cliched. And just for some reason, I think about Sharon Tate and the Manson family. I don't know why. Just this famous person or protected person that somebody wants to get rid of, for God knows what reason.
Yeah. And then, so we've got the nomads in the first book. Second book, the Volturi as the villains.
And the Volturi, first of all, they're kind of a cool villain and a throwback a little bit to our gothic villains, in that they're, like you said, it's in Italy, the setting there, but their main beef is with Edward.
Yeah, and in a way, they have a good reason to have a beef with Edward, because he was going to break the one rule.
The one,
like, vampires can do anything they want except this one thing. You got to keep the secret.
Right.
So if anything, I don't see them as necessarily being villainous, as just being, like, neutral, and Edward was being deliberately provocative.
Well, and then he's kind of like, oh, then I'm going to step out into the sun, and or he's going on a suicide mission there because of his love and obsession for Bella. Which then that plot point just boggles my mind a little bit, of her getting on a plane to Italy. It's like, what? I don't know. But that was pretty wild part of the story.
Yeah. And then with the way that the Volturi are villainous, if I remember, is they kind of have this whole deal, is where they basically make a deal with, like, Alice and Edward. It's like, you know, this human knows our secret, but if she's going to become a vampire soon, then basically they kind of trap them into, basically, like, you have to turn her into a vampire. And for Edward, that's considered that puts them in a villainous role, because that's the one thing he's trying to avoid.
Right. And he's like, I'm not going to do it. But Alice is like, well, to save everybody, I'll do it. Just because Edward is so tortured by the thought of turning into a vampire, simply because he feels like he's damning more over anything.
Not directly into the heroes, heroines, villains role, but again, just makes me think of, again, this notion of vampirism. And there's a lot of controversy among vampires about, you know, the nature of vampirism. Again, is there this religious, oh, we're damned, we don't have souls? Because Edward's position is deeply rooted in traditional religious condemnation of these sort of undead things, whereas, you know, some of the other vampires are just like, yeah, whatever, we are what we are, which kind of reminds me of Carmilla when she was doing her spiel of, like, whatever is in nature is its pure existence is natural. So who is anyone to say that vampires are unnatural or damned?
I like that philosophy. Moreover, Edward's kind of convinced that he's damned no matter what. I didn't get the sentiment from his family that they thought that they definitely don't carry it around like he does. They just kind of go about their business, and he's very brooding, you know.
Yeah, like Rosalie is basically broods as much as Edward in terms of the resentment of being a vampire. But hers is not a spiritual, like, crisis. Her, it's like, oh, I have to live forever and I can't have children, that sucks. But there's no, like, spiritual implication with that.
Okay. Yeah, she's just mainly... So I guess that, I guess if we're talking about the argument of being more anti-feminism, she's mad because she can't do the very, you know, traditional female role or expectation.
Which again is, you can make the argument that Rosalie trying to push Bella back into human, staying a human, is trying to push a woman into a very traditional role. Because those are the all... Those are the all the things that Rosalie misses about being human, but those things aren't important to Bella. So to me, Bella becoming a vampire is the same as like a modern woman saying like, I don't want children, or I don't want to get married. I want to focus on my career and doing stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point.
But alrighty then, any other villains? The Volturi, the Nomads, that's really it, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and there's big, you know, there's the big scene at the end, the big face-off with the army coming.
The Volturi guard,
Yeah, and that kind of eclipse is kind of the action, I guess, book or movie or whatever.
Yeah. Under villains, because I don't know if they're necessarily villains, but we both villain and hero again, because naturally the werewolves had this unsteady... Your precarious truce with the vegetarian vampires. But so Jacob, as a hero, what do we think?
I just did not care about Jacob. He irritated
me. I did not either.
I'm glad they were friends when they were little. And I understand kind of having to give a little bit of a love triangle there and have kind of a foil for Edward. And she kind of runs to Jacob when Edward disappears, but I just wasn't invested at all.
I wasn't that invested either. And, you know, for all the Team Jacob people out there, like, I can understand in the beginning that, yeah, by a direct comparison, Jacob might have been better than Edward. But it got to a point where Jacob was being just as possessive and just as petty and controlling as people claim Edward was being.
Absolutely. Absolutely, he did. And I don't know why, but he irritated me more than Edward. And then at the end with his...
Because Edward is the kind of... You feel more... Because even though you may not like all his behavior, it's coming from a place of, I want, in his own twisted, his own way, I want to save you from this terrible fate, where Jacob's just purely being selfish.
Right. Yeah. There's a little bit. Does he know that she's going to be turned into a vampire at some point, and he's against?
Yeah, there's eventually, because the point of, you know, they're in this catch-22 where they've promised the Volturi that Bella will become a vampire, and then Jacob or the tribe basically tells them like, it's part of our contract that you won't bite anyone, even if it's voluntary. If you do it, we will be at war.
Right. So I guess there's some protection there. The thing that gets me with Jacob, and I think that this is, I'm probably not alone with this, is the imprinting on Renesmee.
Yeah. I could have, I know what Stephanie Meyer was trying to do. It's because it's romance is such a heavy part. It's just a really hard thing to convey. And again, not that I'm endorsing pedophilia in any way, shape, or form. Let's be 100% clear. You know, but, you know, I'm someone where my husband is 15 years older than me.
You know, and then that's kind of the thing that I don't know why it's not that. It's just so, I just wasn't sure. I agree with you. I see what she was doing. Like she...
Or attempting to do, even if it was maybe poorly executed.
Yeah. And we wanted Jacob to end up with a love interest. And I think just given the author's background, they, you know, we needed to have that drama of Bella being pregnant and then, you know, the vampire human hybrid, which then that causes all kinds of drama as well. It wasn't my favorite part of the book.
No, it wasn't my favorite part either. Although I heard, is Stephanie Meyer going to write a Renesmee novel?
Oh God. I don't know. I haven't heard that, but that would be...
I thought I heard something about that maybe, but we shall see. And then finally, the last category in our Gothameter is mystery, which I think is probably the weakest component of all of these within our gothic tropes.
Yeah, I guess the mystery when we're thinking about the first book, Twilight itself, you know, who's the person who is killing these people in the town? That's the mystery. But then it kind of is a little flimsy throughout. I can't think of a mystery point that is highlighted to me right off.
No, like the whole thing is not mystery. Like even when she's trying to figure out what's the deal with Edward, we already know it's a vampire, right? Because it was on like the back of the book cover that's like, you know, he's a vampire and I'm in love with him or something.
Yeah.
Even at the very beginning in 2005, the whole vampire thing wasn't a big mystery either.
No, it's pretty black and white that, or I mean, you know what you're getting into. I think if anything, the mystery is more Bella's sake,
trying to figure out, like, I have the like combo version of Twilight with Life and Death, Twilight Reimagined. So I can't
read
the back cover of it, but.
Yeah, I cannot bring myself to do Life and Death. I'm sorry.
I haven't read it. I bought it and I just wasn't in a huge rush. Like I'm intrigued and I want to read this, but
the only way I would be interested is purely from an academic standpoint. If you do a gender switch and, you know, try and flip all the feminist stuff on its head, like, and see how it plays, how we interpret it when the gender roles are swapped. Like that would be interesting from that perspective, but purely from like an academic trying to combat all the criticism, like just purely for enjoyment. I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't see a lot about it. You know, I feel like it's not as widely read. I think it might've just come out too late. The Short Life of Bree Tanner, I feel like that one is not as widely read, but I know I read it and that was involved with, was it Eclipse when they were making the little vampire army?
And then they had to enlist the help of the werewolves in the tribe.
Right. Yeah. So mystery, I couldn't think of, I guess like how was Bella going to get back home and not like, and her dad be like, oh, it's all right. Cool that you went to Italy randomly, you know, whatever. But I don't know. Not very heavy in the mystery here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no great surprises with mystery. So those are all the categories. Would you like me to read? I've flipped randomly to a page in Midnight Sun.
Oh, please do.
Please don't.
Please do. Please do. That's what please do.
Okay, so this is page 175. I was so furious that my body froze in place there, utterly motionless. My ice-locked hands ached to crush her attacker, to grind him into pieces so mangled that his body could never be identified. But that would entail leaving her here alone, unprotected in the dark night. My mind was replaying scenes from my hunting days, images I wish I could forget, especially now with the urge to kill so much stronger than any hunting compulsion I'd ever felt before. This man, this abomination, was not the worst of his kind, though it was difficult to sort the depths of evil into a merit-based order. Still, I remembered the very worst. There had never been any question that he deserved that title.
So this is when she is going to get a prom dress, because she's, I think this is what it's about. And she's being approached by the guys in the alleyway, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely the Port Angeles attempted rape scene, which again, a lot of criticism for this scene.
Because of like the implied almost sexual assault, or just because of the like Edward
again, the continual showing Bella as defenseless, the use of rape as a plot device, as a cheap plot device, and then the idea that trying to betray Edward stalking of Bella as a good thing that saved her.
Oh my. Well,
there are a lot of ways you could go about it. I talked about it in my BookTube review of Midnight Sun, and I'm more of the opinion that I wasn't upset by this scene because this, you know, rape is an unfortunate thing that does happen. And just because an author portrays unsavory elements of our society doesn't mean that they are condoning it or necessarily trying to say a specific something about it.
Yeah. I mean, I won't get in too deep, but I also think that I don't know many a sexual assault victim that wouldn't have minded somebody there to help him out. again, with the criticism being, it's just like, okay.
Yeah, I'm just one of those people that I don't hound an author for showing distasteful elements of the world. And the only thing I will say, if I have a beef with this scene, it's just the reality of if you're using sexual assault in your story, you know, statistically speaking, this is buying into the stereotype that most rapes are and sexual assault is coming from the big bad guy in the alleyway that's a total stranger, when in reality, most sexual assaults are by acquaintances and people that are known.
That's very true.
So that's my only one beef with if we want to talk about the use of, you know, attempted sexual assault in literature, is that certainly I'm not saying that this isn't an element that happens sometimes, and certainly by the nature of how much, you know, street harassment is prevalent against women, like women don't know who is just an idiot shooting his mouth off and who would really do some damage.
Right. I think that's a fair criticism there. I think your criticism of it is fair, being that that's kind of reinforcing this. The only time a sexual assault happens is, you know, in the shadowy dark alleys, which is 100% not true. So I think that's a just criticism.
Yeah. But other than that, yeah, I didn't have a problem so much with this scene. And again, you know, in the mind of a teenage girl, it's like, oh yes, the bad boy comes and rescues me, yay.
You know, I think that I don't remember it being that gratuitous. I think it was scary, you know, but I feel like I've read much more disturbing kind of scenarios played out, and I'm glad somebody was there to help her out. Like, goodness, what I understand the impetus for that scene, because then he takes her to dinner, I think he's stalking her, which, whatever, that, not whatever, that's not the greatest thing. I'm not saying that, but it's funny.
Yeah, and to me, there's a difference between, again, I don't know if it's appropriate to say there are different levels of stalking. He's doing it in a way, he has superpower abilities, that he can totally remain anonymous. He's not being like the stalker who's up in your face, like, I'm watching you and you can't do anything about it.
Well, I think that you make a good point that he's also a vampire, and this is a vampire story. I don't know if we're romanticizing, you know, this stalking so much. I think that, or, and if it is being romanticized or whatever, that, you know, let's all just get it out of the way. That's not a good thing. Stalking is not a good thing. But having somebody help you out in a bad situation, I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I just flicked to another section, the page before. I had to kill him. I would peel him slowly apart, piece by piece, skin from muscle, muscle from bone. So yeah, you get a lot of really dark elements of Edward that you didn't get in the rosy-tinted Twilight.
Yeah, is he, what's his name in Game of Thrones? I'm just thinking of,
the Boltons. Guy.
Yeah, Ramsay Bolton, like all of a sudden.
Just, you know, flaying everyone.
Oh my God, that's like, no thanks. Yeah, I think that was one of the things I picked up when I started Midnight Sun, is how just like how angry Edward was. But, you know, whatever, we only got Bella's perspective in the first
yeah, book. What would Jane Eyre be like from Rochester's perspective?
There you go. I bet it's out there.
It's probably out there. Although there is one I'm curious about, is there is a novel that was written about where Rochester's first wife is the main character, and it's how she met Rochester before she went insane.
Oh, interesting.
I forget its name, but it is out there.
We can have that conversation another time, but I sometimes just don't know how much I like that. I don't know how often it's well executed.
Alrighty then, and that concludes the season finale of season 2 for Sublimely Gothic. So we're going to take a little bit of a break, but we will be back next month, and the first episode of season 3 of Sublimely Gothic will be a special interview with Katrina Leno, wherein we'll be discussing her latest book, Horrid.
Yeah, read it if you haven't. It's a great... Great.
It's really deep for a YA novel.
It is very
deep. I totally
was
not anticipating that.
And very dark. Yeah.
Super dark. Super old school. More questions than answers at the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that. We'll see you guys in a month. Catch you guys later. Bye.